Okay, so for me to go first. Hey, Rich,
yeah, thank you. Thank you.
If I do five for this, I've got 3 minutes.
You got to shake clips.
Grab those while we're watching the news, and then thank you.
There you go.
You know what that was? That was a prison.
Right.
Never had a nice car.
Just excuse me.
Okay, we'll do that.
It is.
Well, thank you all for coming tonight. For the record, this is the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation and Preservation and Modernization. It's a big title. It means we're the Transportation Committee trying to look at a package. Just to put you some background here, and then we'll do introductions, is this is a joint House and Senate committee. Our purpose is to go out throughout the state. We're doing about 8, maybe a little more in that, meetings throughout all corners of the state to try and get the input from the citizens about what is it that you would like to talk about in terms of what are your projects or your priorities for transportation, if you think there are some. And our basic premise as we come into this is we don't have enough money to maintain the road system. The governor did a study. We know that. So the question is there a willingness among the citizenry to put a little bit more forward to pay for the road system? If so, how much? And how would you like to pay for that? Is it a gas tax, registration fees, or something else, some other novel idea that you might have that the legislature should consider? This committee will, our intent is after we do the tour around the state, we will begin negotiations a little later this fall and hopefully put together a bipartisan package for consideration in the 2017 session. All righty, so we're going to start off with some introductions, and I will start. I am Lee Beyer. I'm a state senator that represent the Mid-Willamette Valley area. Can I say Mid-Willamette Valley?
Yeah, you can.
Lynn and Lane counties, because you...
I have the other half.
And my co-chair?
I'm Katty McEwen. I represent House District 9. My district goes from Coos Bay to Yahats and almost into Eugene. I think I win the prize for the farthest travel this time, which is rare. And I'm delighted to co-chair this committee with Senator Beyer, and happy to be here.
And my Senate co-chair?
I'm Senator Brian Boquist, and I represent the western half of the Willamette Valley, except southern Marion County, all the way to the top of the Cascades.
And the House Vice Chair?
I'm Cliff Benz, and of course represent District 60, and very happy to have all of you here this evening.
Okay, and if we just go on down this side first.
My name is John Lively. I'm from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield.
Good evening. I'm Representative Greg Smith. I represent District 57, which includes Umatilla County, Morrow County, Gillon County, Sherman County, and Wasco County. I represent the Port of Umatilla, the Port of Morrow, Port of Arlington, Biggs Junction, and the Port of the Dalles.
You did well.
A lot of ports.
I'm Andy Olson, state representative from the Albany area.
Senator?
I'm Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16 in Northwest Oregon, North Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah in the industrial working waterfront, and portions of Washington County.
I'm Jackie Winters, and I represent Salem, Monmouth, Independence, Almsville, and Turner.
Senator Rod Monroe, District 24, which is mid-Multnomah County, not the inside of Portland, but out toward Gresham. And then northern Clackamas County, big chunk of that. And I've been in government for 40 years.
My name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator from Eugene. I represent about two-thirds of Eugene and Junction City in the state senate.
Okay, well, thank you all. We have about 10 people who, civic leaders here that have been invited to offer their comments representing all of the local areas. And then I think I got about a similar number of people signed up who want to comment. And we're going to try to hold it to about 4 minutes to make sure everybody has a chance to say whatever they want to say. And Representative Bentz, you're first on the list, and you have a slideshow. And I think that we're sitting on the wrong side of the bench.
We can just go grab the...
I don't know. How
about if we just go sit in the front row here for... Just during
that
the
work?
Show.
Okay. We will just...
I will man the fort.
You will man the fort? All right.
Don't sell the fort.
Don't sell the fort.
No promises.
Okay, we can do this.
Justifying to you, Patrick.
Yes, your time starts when you start.
You're so kind. Well, I want to welcome the fellow legislators to Treasure Valley, and I want to show you we actually do have water here. There's a picture of our reservoir, and I don't know if we get the lights turned down. Can we get the lights turned down a bit? Lights.
I think they're as low as they go.
This is okay. All right. There's a reservoir. There, of course, is Malheur County, the second largest county in the state. I want to call out the amount of state road miles, 419, and, of course, the county road miles, 2,000. Baker County, which I have the privilege to represent, it's 319 state road miles, state highway miles, and 916 county road miles. And then Grant County, and we have, 235 state highway miles and 860 county miles. And then Harney County, that's a nice picture. I'm not sure. Must be taken off the Steens. It's the largest county in the state. And again, 346 state highway miles and 2,300 county road miles. And finally, Lake County, which I just represent a portion of, but nonetheless, again, about 320 state highway miles and 1,100 county road miles. I like showing where Ontario is, and as you can see, we are 422 miles to Salem. It's easier almost to go to Reno, which is interesting. Ontario to Seattle is 450 miles, so not that much further than to Salem. And then Ontario, Spokane, very close, 347 miles. Salt Lake City, 393 miles. And Sacramento, not that we would want to go there, but 558 miles. I'd like showing those who are new to this area exactly where Ontario is in relation to Boise. And one of my concepts is to begin to have everyone say Ontario, Boise, so that folks understand that in this area there are roughly 800,000 people. And we are right here. We are basically 150 yards from 800,000 people. And so when people think of Ontario looking back over towards Salem, they seldom recognize the fact that we are so close to so many folks and such an enormous workforce. And I'd like also to call out the fact that Ontario is the perfect place for the hub, as we were talking about earlier, because of all of these roads that all seem to come together here along with our railroad. This is my last slide. Yes, it is my last slide. I just want to call out once again our population of 16,000 people in Baker. And again, there are our city roads, county roads, state highways, federal roads, of course, and then our total road miles. You can see that the totals for our roads are dramatically larger than our population. And this means that we have an incredible burden when it comes to trying to maintain these county roads. You'll hear about that this afternoon. I think it's terrifically important. I don't want to get too carried away with this hub concept, although it's extremely important for the economy. This is really one of the most important issues right here, those 7,000 miles of county roads. And not to mention, of course, our state highway system, so important to be able to drive back and forth from wherever we might be to wherever we might want to go in this huge and beautiful area. So once again, that's the end of my slides. Thank you so much for being here, and now we can get all to meaningful testimony. Thank you.
Representative, thank you very much, and thank you for keeping us on timing track here. Significant amount of miles, significant issues. And I was commenting to Representative McGowan while we're here, is just McEwen. I always say that wrong.
Okay. He's forgiven.
But I'm consistent.
You are.
Consistently wrong. Put it in context, I think the recent governor's report that came out mentioned that we had about 3,500 bridges in the state, about 900 of them that were, yeah, oops, I was wrong, 76,000 bridges, 71,000, almost 72,000 miles of pavement. So a lot. A lot of it's over here, so you know, we have some big issues as a city to try and figure out how to maintain it all so that we don't lose it. Okay, next up then is, so we're last, okay, just following the script here. Lynn Findlay, and
all three are going together?
Sure. Okay, and Don Joyce and Steve, well, Steve's not here. Someone must be taking Steve's place. Grassley? Harney County Judge. He's not here tonight. He's dealing with a different matter right now. You're on.
Good afternoon, Committee Chair Senator Beyer and Representative McGowan, members of the committee.
I'm sorry, it's McEwen. I just want to get everybody clear.
I apologize.
Once we start down that road, it never ends.
You know, and it's just a mental thing.
Just
I knew that.
Think about Rod McEwen, if that resonates. McEwen, thank you.
Well, you're going to kill me, aren't you?
Thank you for coming to Eastern Oregon. I mean, it is such an honor to have an esteemed body of your stature to come and listen to our issues.
Your name on the record, please.
My name is Lynn Findlay. I am the city manager for the city of Vail. I am a member of the Southeast Area Commission on Transportation. As a city manager in a small rural community, we face many challenges. In Eastern Oregon, they seem to be a little more. At some point, you know, the Translo facility that you've had a conversation about would help us, you know, out of the city of Vail and our partners, we ship about 5,000 truckloads of onions a year. Half of those come through my city's streets, and you know, the transload facility would help that enormously. But a bigger problem that we have and that we face with is how to maintain and improve our city infrastructure, namely our streets. A major component that we rely on for our help is a special city allotment. I'm sure you're all aware of it, the ORS 366-800, the small special city allotment. It was enacted in 1991. It has been a critical tool for small cities, less than 5,000, to perform and stay alive. It's depicted for most of cities less than 5,000 people. In the SEAC, Southeast Area Commission on Transportation, in Malheur, Harney, and Grant County, that covers every city in the region except one, and that's the one we're sitting in Ontario. Every other city applies for and depends on the special city allotment to maintain our status quo in our streets. And quite frankly, it's hard to do. In 2012, the allotment was raised from a $25,000 grant to $50,000 grant, a great thing. Up until 2012, the recurrency on that loan or on that grant program is about every 3 years. As the cities, we could rely on it. About every 3 years, we'd be able to repave a street or to chip seal or to do stuff. When it went to $50,000, now the occurrence is about 8 to 10 years. And quite frankly, in that 8 to 10 year period, we are falling significantly behind. You know, and it's not a matter of should we be more efficient. In Malheur County, and we share with the road districts, the cities, the state, and we all combine and do projects. Right now, there's a combined chip sealing project that goes on, and every entity is providing trucks, and we all go from place to place. We chip seal for about a month, and we all share stuff because no one entity can afford to do it. And that's the only way we can do stuff. In our city, our gas tax is not raised in 7 years. Our costs have gone up about 24%. We are in serious discussion to convert paved streets back to gravel because we simply cannot maintain them. You know, there's a lot of ways to do it. You know, we've taken all the low-hanging fruit. We've made all of our efficient measures. There's nothing more to do than to figure out how to increase that revenue stream. And it's a critical program. When it was enacted, funded from the top, $500,000 from ODOT, $500,000 from the cities going to that program. There's a lot of discussion on how to do that. One proposal is to raise that limit, that from $1 million annual fund to $5 million. That would put the reoccurrence back in a number that we could at least perhaps maintain a status quo for our streets. Every city in Oregon, last grant cycle, there were 23 applicants, 5 awards in Region 5 of ODOT, 2 in the SEAC. And they're doing the best they can, but our frequency is too infrequent, and our streets are failing. We need more help. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner.
Co-Chair Beyer, Co-Chair McEwen, members of the committee, vice co-chairs, my name is Dan Joyce, Malheur County Judge. Thank you for preparing a transportation package and allowing us to share our ideas with you on this issue while you come to Eastern Oregon. Hopefully you'll come away with a Southeast Oregon perspective. Malheur County has over 2,100 miles of roads that the county and 4 road districts maintain with limited resources. Our funding covers some of the maintenance and some of the preservation. Our road department is considering turning back some of their paved roads to gravel. And you can imagine what the voters are going to say about that one. Bridges. We have bridges that have been on the books for the last 30 years. We have a bridge between Idaho and Oregon that has reduced traffic on it now because of the weight restrictions. And these are on farm-to-market roads, which in turn impacts the city streets, as Lynn just alluded to. We have another bridge out in the country that brings the east side to the west side. And the gentleman that farms in that country told me a couple mornings ago, I'm 77 years old. I hope I live long enough to see it repaired. I hope that you can continue to fund Connect Oregon at levels that we've seen in the past. And as a note that I already alluded to, the amount of dollars that could go to these three counties if they were set in stone with an upward limit would help the application process. Lastly, I thank you for the projects that you've already funded here in Malheur County. Lytle Boulevard, 36th Street Bridge, the airports in Ontario and Vail, the Juntura Cutoff Road. Thank you. Thanks to Representative Bence, Representative Smith, for allowing you people and getting you people here in our community. We thank you for attending. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions of the
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Next up, we have Commissioners Bennett, Kessner, and Britton.
Actually, if I'd have been smart, I'd have started talking because I could have gotten an additional minute out of this. Welcome to Eastern Oregon. We are always appreciative. I'm Commissioner Mark Bennett, representing Baker County, the heart of Eastern Oregon. But generally, we find that the West Side folks think that Eastern Oregon is Bend or Pendleton, and we're really glad to see you here. Quickly, kind of a brief overview of Baker City and County situation. Why a local levy is not an option. 27% of our population in Baker County and in Eastern Oregon is living below the poverty level. 70% of our school children receive free and reduced lunches. 25% of our population are utilizing behavioral health. We have a serious problem here. We don't have the option of local levies. Baker County is currently experiencing an $800,000 shortfall because of federal inaction on the secure rural schools, and that is totally in our road department. We have 19 personnel for that 1,000 miles that Cliff pointed out. We last year had to convert paved roads to gravel roads. We don't, and a lot of our roads are actually dirt roads. So our number one priority in Baker County is the preservation and maintenance of what we have, that infrastructure. We spend over $200,000 a year at Baker County for tourism and for economic development. We're trying to get people to come here, but if we don't have a solid infrastructure, we can't meet that need. So we compete, as Cliff just pointed out, Representative Benz just pointed out, with those 800,000 people in that metroplex next door to us, and they move. They just don't stop at our point. Along with the modernization projects, we do have a few. We have a list of modernization projects, but we're trying to preserve what we have. Added to this challenge is the uncertainty of the low carbon fuel tax. Agriculture is our keystone of our local economy, in excess of $94 million. I have kind of a little quick anecdote about that. My wife and I, we have a ranching operation up in Unity there. And last January, we purchased our fuel and for our winter operations. This spring, we just purchased fuel to begin our haying operations, and it had gone up 50 cents a gallon. Agriculture does not have the option of charging more. I can't say now we want 50 cents a pound more for our beef. We need we need certainty. And with the low carbon fuel tax, we can't, as agriculture producers, we just cannot put a target onto it. So we really encourage you to help us with that. Make it clearer. How's it going to impact us? Because you've already heard of our situation. You know, if we were an urban, you know, if we were Chicago and we had put out those statistics, everybody would go, oh my gosh, 27% of our population below the poverty level, 70% of our school children free and reduced lunches, 25% of our population on behavioral health. We have serious issues here. However, we need the support. And we thank you that you're here. And we feel that the issues are closely interwoven. So once again, you know, welcome to Eastern Oregon and thank you for your time. But please consider us as you're putting together your packages. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Do you have questions of me? Any questions? No? Go ahead.
I was hoping you'd ask Mark questions because he's a lot smarter than I am. And you've already heard a lot of my spiel already, and I'll just reiterate some of it. I have the answer for the low-carbon fuel tax.
Commissioner?
Oops.
And did you put your name on the record, please?
Oh, Commissioner Boyd Britton from Grant County. Anyway, you've already heard my answer. Just do away with it and then go another direction. Anyway, our situation is somewhat like his, a little bit different. We do have I already told you, our road department's in a different situation than his. We're just lucky, and I'll admit it, but the rest of them aren't. And I will, he says they're the heart of Eastern Oregon. Actually, Grant County is, because if you look on the map, we have more neighbors than any other county in the state. And I can read them off to you right quick if you really want to know. Anyway, back to the transportation package. We desperately need to preserve our roads. That's all there is to it. We don't really need a whole bunch of new ones. The rail thing would be a great thing. And we told you that we work together out here. If you heard any of the other counties not be in support of it, we are in support of it. Because what helps Malheur County is going to help us. Same way for Baker County. We all kind of stick together. And we were back to the Connect Oregon thing with the Port of Morrow. Representative Smith, I mean, We won the sweepstakes a couple years ago on the Connect Oregon 5. We got a great big project for that, and but unfortunately some of the other ones kind of fell out of the way. But it was a good project and went forward. And we just brought another one, Moore County Grain Growers. We just funded them, in the Connect Oregon 6. It's a good project, going to produce a lot of jobs. But fortunately this time it went. It went well for us, especially for some of the smaller projects. So We like to connect Oregon. I know you're going to probably go back and fool with it a little bit. You've already heard some of my suggestions on that, and maybe it needs to go back the way it was in the beginning. But it does help, and I know this wasn't the intention, but out here in eastern Oregon, it does help some of those projects that don't have a prayer of ever getting funded any other way. And that's one of the things that we share and we kind of work around. We don't have that big competition out here that, you know, with the NEAC and the SEAC. We all kind of get along. We understand that. So I'll go ahead and say it in public. I would advocate you go for a large gas tax increase. Put it on, index it to something. You need to, because if gas goes up to $5 a gallon, that's going to be a killer. But if it stays where it is now, even though it has gone up, I think the certainty of that, I think Mr. Bennett, some of the agricultural people, I think they'd buy it if there's certainty to it. Anyway, I'll let more intelligent, more articulate people speak than me, unless you have any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Representative.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners, for being here. Commissioner Britton, you said that you thought the people of Grant County would support a gas tax or some sort of an increase, but you kind of glossed over why they would. Why would anybody want to pay a higher tax? Do the people there understand the value of the roads, or what is it that you have to go back and say to people when they say, why'd you raise our taxes? What do you say to them?
Well, it was really, really hard, and, like that low-carbon tax, that was a hard one to... I didn't even try to defend it. Sorry, folks. I didn't even try. But this one, I can honestly look them in the eye and say, hey, we've got great roads right now, and we need to preserve them. That's what gets us back and forth, what gets us to home. And it's an investment. It's like our homes. I can look them in the eye and give them a cause and effect and a correlation to an investment like, a bank account or a home, that if you put this into it, you're going to get this out of it. And if you don't put this and you let it go to, you let it deteriorate, I almost did it. Okay, I'm sorry, sir. If you let it deteriorate, it's going to cost you more. Y'all remember the old Fram commercial? Pay me now or pay me later? That's what's going to happen.
Sure. I do have a question, too.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator, and then Senator Monroe.
I had a question for Commissioner Bennett. You made mention preservation is the number one priority, but you're already converting asphalt back to gravel. You heard testimony earlier, and I don't know if this has ever been discussed, about the special city allotment. Is the situation in your mind, at least in your county, in terms of roads are going backwards, so even if you did get a small increase, that we should consider like a special county allotment to try and increase short-term the amount of road preservation that can be done? Or is it too late? Or is there too many of these roads that are already going to just go to gravel regardless?
No, we are just, that was one isolated road. I don't want to leave the impression that it's our entire paved portion of the road system. We would, obviously welcome a special one-time allotment so we could catch it up, stop the bleed, and move forward onto it. That would be our goal. But once again, preservation is our number one. We have a bridge out from the floods 3 years ago in Halfway that we just haven't been able to replace, and so people have to drive completely around. Our biggest problem is we just really don't have match money. We have right now several roads that we could undertake under FLAP, Federal Lands Access Program, and there's a 10% match, and we just don't have the 10%.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Monroe?
In your testimony, I heard the word index. Are you in favor of us indexing the gas tax so that if, in fact, inflation moves the numbers up, that they would automatically increase by that amount?
Sir, Senator Monroe, I'm just one Yahoo County Commissioner, but to me that seems fair, because if you don't index it, there's no end, there could be no end to it. And I think to be fair to the citizens, it has to be indexed off of something. So they've got some consistency there that said, oh my goodness, you know, gas goes back up to $4.50 a gallon. Then, and I know it's going to be a nightmare for you folks, because you're going to be losing part of that income that you were counting on. But at least the citizens would know that, hey, the state's willing to bleed as well with the citizens. Does that make sense?
Makes sense to me. 40 years ago, when I was a freshman state representative, I advocated for indexing the gas tax. If we'd have done it at that time, there'd be enough money now for all of our roads and highways.
That's a, what we used to say out here in Eastern Oregon is that's an amen.
Senator, thank you. I just want to clarify, Commissioner, when you're talking about indexing, you're talking about indexing up and down, correct? So if they get, that's what I'm, I think I want to make sure that Senator Monroe and I are very familiar with this concept. I just want to make sure you're talking about is if gas goes to $5 a gallon, the tax goes down, but then if the gas actually went down, then maybe the tax might go up, or indexing in turn over time, correct? Let's discuss this afterwards.
I'm certainly glad you got that question, Boyd.
Well, sir, frankly, if it went down, to me, that would be an opportunity for y'all to put something, excuse me, I'm not a legislature, but for you to put something in the legislation where that excess at a certain point would go into a fund, you know, to fund strictly transportation. I mean, that would be my thought, but I am glad that you guys are the ones that are the ones that are going to be wise enough to put all this together and not me.
Just to be real clear, so there's no confusion here, any money that's raised on a transportation basis constitutionally can only be spent on roads and highways. Just to be real clear about that. Representative McEwen.
I think I'm fine, Chair Beyer. My question's been asked and answered. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, gentlemen.
Once again, thank you so much for coming out here.
Yes,
thank you.
And Commissioner Kester, is he here?
No, Ken's not here.
Guess not. Okay, so I have Mayor Verini.
Think about it.
Welcome, Mayor.
Well,
I guess you can welcome us. We've been through this before.
Exactly. You're so used to us coming over there. I'm Ron Verini, Mayor of Ontario, and really very thrilled to see all of your faces here, especially for that trip coming across. I want to get right into it. We here in Malheur County have been getting, I think, the short end of the stick from our legislature in Salem over the last few years. And we're starting to suffer the results of measures enacted in Salem that have tremendous repercussions with us locally. We have, because of the rules on the books regarding simple thing like marijuana legislation, resulted in an increase in traffic through our community from Idaho, with consequences on our roads and bridges. At the same time, we've had the pleasure of an increase of a minimum wage that is driving some of our ag business across the river to Idaho, which means that Idaho gets the jobs and we end up with the increased traffic on our roads without the benefit of having our citizens getting work and being able to sustain themselves, of course, here in Ontario and Malheur County. I want all of you to understand that I am asking for a transportation package that includes a gas tax that will come back to our community, helping our road and bridge infrastructure, keeping the road system intact so that at least we have the roads to transport goods across the state and attract corporations to settle here. In fact, that the low carbon fuel standard was passed, with absolutely no money going into the infrastructure repair and our communities. We just had Portland raise a gas tax of 10 cents a gallon, solving some of their issues, their potholes, I'm hearing, but not really the girth of their roads, their transportation backlogs on the city streets and that sort of thing. So I think what we can do, we can raise that gas tax, or actually put a gas tax in, that can help not only Portland, but really help Eastern Oregon because of the massive system that we have here. It's my understanding that we as a state missed some federal money that was available through the federal matching program because of the fact that we're really not proactive going back to the transportation package during a time that we were talking about renovating our Capitol building. I think we have our priorities just a little messed up. We need our roads. We need our bridges. We need that transportation package. We need the gas tax to absolutely implement that. I am not the smartest tack in this group. I brought two engineers from CH2. These guys are our public works. They put together a list of the top five roads and problems that we have in our city. We're talking about sidewalks, bike lanes, bridge widening, upgrades. As a perfect example, our underpass. I mean, our storm drain improvements. I mean, we get floods constantly during our heavy rains. We do get water here. We do get rain. I think the bottom line on this whole thing is we are willing to work together as a team on this side of the state. We work with each of our cities as a team. We work in each of our counties as a team. And I think if you understand the needs of our community, which I think you've seen a lot of just recently with the drive around and maybe with a few talks that I just gave, but bottom line on this whole thing is we are willing to push this package as heavy as you want us to sell it to the community, to get the votes in there for you guys. We need it here.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Senator?
I'm just confused by something you said. By our inattention, what federal money did we let slip past us?
There was last year, the transportation package was being talked about, and I believe that the governor knocked that out at the time that you guys were talking about renovating the Capitol building. It just happened that the both were being talked about at the same time. And there was federal monies available, and I know that California received some of that money and Washington State received some of that money. It was matching funds. And it all had to do with us in our state having a transportation package in place, a gas tax in place.
I think that comment comes as a surprise. We're not aware of that. And there really was no relationship between the discussions about seismically fixing the Capitol and the roads. Not same money.
Well, it came at the same time. I wasn't saying that one. I was trying to jar the memory. It came at the same time as the Capitol improvements.
Oh, I bet that was it. CRC.
I think
there's a recognition. When we were talking about fixing the Columbia River crossing on I-5, there was an allocation of federal money of a little over $1 billion for that, but because Washington State wouldn't go along with it, we lost that. That may be what you're talking about.
Well, I Googled it.
Okay.
It's on the internet. Mr. Mayor, I can assure you the Google's not a reliable source.
Tell me about it.
Okay, any other questions to the mayor?
You.
But I think very seriously, we will support the gas tax.
Thank you for your hospitality.
Chair, it would be helpful to have his list in the record, if you don't mind.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be, yeah.
Thank you.
Who should I give this to?
Over there. Way over there in the corner. All righty, Mr. Warner? Fred Warner?
He's not here
either. Okay, we're working our way right through this. Back to the top, and Craig Sip? Sip. Super. Whoever you want to bring along.
And I had a brief PowerPoint, but to save you the move.
Thank you.
We have a long drive tomorrow. We appreciate that.
If I counted right, hopefully you have the correct amount up there.
Thank you, Patrick.
Whenever you're ready.
All right. I'll go ahead and get started. Co-chairs Byers and McEwen, my name's Craig Sip. I'm the region manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation for the Eastern Oregon area or region.
And Craig, thank you for helping put this together.
Thank you. First off, Region 5 encompasses.
You got your clicker here to advance the slides.
Okay. Thank you. Region 5 encompasses over a third of the state, including 8 counties, as we've already seen. Malheur, Harney, Grant, Baker, Union, Wallowa, Mora, and Umatilla, plus areas of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservations and the Burns Paiute Tribe Reservation. Like other parts of Oregon, there's lots of beautiful places to see here, as attested by thousands of vacationers that set their sights each year on what some refer to as the dry side of the state, or warm side, as we've seen today in our tour. Along with unique destinations, our relatively low traffic volumes and charming communities along rural highways is one of the aspects that keeps motorists, motorcycle riders, bicycle riders, hikers, and others coming back. So that was my intro. There's the map of basically what area that we cover from a transportation division within ODOT. What I really want to focus on, though, and the emphasis for this hearing is the bridges themselves. And so they've got two maps here. On your PowerPoint presentations that we can see. The first one is currently we have around 150 bridges that have issues, whether they're structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. They have issues that could become more life-threatening as far as to the public traffic, commerce, and traveling public. The next slide shows the additional future impacts potentially, and the primary reason for that would be close to another 150 bridges needing review by special haul vehicle loads that will be analyzed. And currently we have 3 weight-restricted bridges. In Eastern Oregon, a lot of our bridges that may be impacted, as we talked about, we don't have alternate routes. So if we're looking at bridges that may be load-restricted or impacted, at that standpoint, looking at alternate routes for those restrictions or closures could have a huge impact on the detours and the routes for commerce from that standpoint. And especially, the last photo I have is a picture of a border bridge. And we have several border bridges that, as Representative Bence have shared with us, is we're the kind of the central hub here, and we have a lot of border bridges with Idaho. And this one had a potential a few years back to be restricted, which would have really restricted the commerce between Oregon and Idaho at that point. And currently we have funding to do some work at this in the future STIP cycle. So the border bridges are just as important. I'll finish with a recap back on the special haul vehicles, because that's an area that I think that's facing us and a need that we see from a transportation standpoint in that regards. And those special haul vehicles, those are single unit vehicles. They're your dump trucks, things of that nature, with multiple axles that allows them to carry a lot more weight. Which is allowed when we look at the analysis. The impact is on our shorter bridges, our short span bridges, usually less than 200 feet, or even our single span bridges, which will affect both the state system and more especially the county systems that we city and counties out there with these vehicles. We're currently looking at just under 1,000 bridges, 986 bridges that we'll be looking at for this analysis, under spans of 200 as I mentioned, and 800, a little over 800 of those are on the county system and only 150 on the state system. And the impacts, if those are load restricted, as I mentioned again, is so critical because there's no, you typically in our small communities, there's no alternate routes. And a lot of these are farm to market routes. And so that's where the need truly is. By the year 2022, that number will jump to 3,000, or a little over 3,700 bridges that we'll be trying to analyze for these impacts for these type of trucks. And again, the larger portion of those are on city and county bridges, well over 2,800 at this point. So with that, I think the emphasis again is there's a lot of needs out there, bridges being one of them. We've had a lot of funding in the past, but there's still the impacts in eastern Oregon that we see is tremendous if we're going to continue to maintain the commerce and public service in regards to getting goods and services where we need to. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Mullen.
Yeah, my name's Richard Moulton. I'm Malheur County Road Supervisor. And just like was mentioned, you know, being a small rural community, we have very limited alternate routes if we have to put weight restrictions on any of our bridges. Also, like a number of these counties, we don't have the funding to repair or replace any damaged bridges, anything like that. We've got well over 100 bridges of 20 feet or greater on this county. And to try to maintain them at the financial level that we are is really tough. You know, there's a large amount of farm-to-market traffic, like he mentioned, and it's just getting tougher all the time. And these bridges aren't getting, you know, any better. They're just, we're losing ground. And there's getting to be more of them that are going to have to be either replaced or major repairs, and we just don't have the funding or the match or anything to do this. So, you know, that's about all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
So, Co-Chair McEwen, Co-Chair Byers, members of the committee, thank you for coming to Ontario today to hear about transportation needs and opportunities in Southeast Oregon. My name is Scott Fairley. I'm the Eastern Oregon Regional Solutions Coordinator, and I'd like to talk with you just a few minutes today about the region's economy and the importance of transportation to that economy. As you likely saw on your tour today, the agriculture is the largest private sector player in the economy of Southeast Oregon. It's the growing of agricultural crops, the processing of those crops, and the movement of those crops from farms and fields to markets around the world. Now, just to kind of put that in perspective for you, Treasure Valley, including Malheur County, one of the largest onion producing areas in the United States, over 1.5 billion tons of onions are grown here. That has an impact to the regional economy of $160 million. And is the equivalent of 35,000 truckloads per year of onions traveling from farms and fields to ultimate destinations around primarily the Midwest East Coast, some on the West Coast, and the Pacific Rim. Beef was mentioned a little bit earlier. You may not realize this, but you are just outside one of the highest per capita densities of cows anywhere in Oregon. That would be along Willow Creek. There are over 500,000 cows in Southeast Oregon. Those have a value of over $200 million to the region economy. Every one of those cows, when it moves to processing, gets in the back of a truck and is driven to processing primarily in Pasco and Southeast Washington or to the Midwest. So again, heavy users of the local state transportation system. And then finally, hay, which is not surprising given the size of agriculture in the region. So over 500,000 tons of hay grown in Southeast Oregon every year. Now, that has a value to the region economy of $80 million. Half of that stays here to feed livestock, but the other half, about 7,500 truckloads a year, moves west to Western Oregon, Western Washington, and on to the Pacific Rim. So agriculture is a very key part of the region economy. Being able to move agricultural goods from farms and fields to processing and markets is absolutely crucial to this region's economy. Now, in addition to that, the region is also trying to diversify their region economy. Primarily here in Malheur County, Vail, Ontario, and Nessa recently have gone through an effort to get new industrial lands brought into their urban growth boundaries to diversify their region's economy. You saw some of that today. Recently, 1,000 acres of those lands was designated a regionally significant industrial area by the state of Oregon. Those lands need some additional investments, including transportation investments, but this area is very competitive due to its low power rates, access to workforce from the Boise Valley, and also because of the transportation system. This area is very competitive for attracting data centers, as you heard, new warehousing distribution opportunities, additional manufacturing, and more food processing. So there's just a tremendous opportunity tied to the industrial land in the region. So undergirding all this agricultural economy and the opportunity we have for industrial development is the region's transportation system. As Representative Benz discussed earlier, this area is a transportation hub. We have an extensive county and city street networks. We have Interstate 84, US 26, 20, and 95, Oregon 201, the Oregon Eastern Short Line Railroad, and the Union Pacific Main Line. So maintaining that system we have today is absolutely crucial for maintaining the economy of southeastern Oregon. Now, being able to make additional investments in that system, being able to add capacity to the city and county and state road systems, being able to make improvements, transportation improvements to the region's industrial land to make those sites more ready for development, and then also importantly, being able to more rapidly, efficiently, and affordably move goods that are grown or processed from this region to markets around the country and around the globe could conservatively create 1,000 jobs in Southeast Oregon. So there is a tremendous opportunity to grow the economy both at the state and the regional level by supporting the region's transportation system. So I just want to thank you again for coming out today. I appreciate your time. This is a fabulous opportunity for the region to be able to talk with you about transportation needs and opportunities and for you to better understand the opportunities in Southeast Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions, members? Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Richard, I know when you and I were talking yesterday about today's discussion, I was asking how many of our 2,115 county road miles in Malheur County were in bad condition. I know you guys just talked about the bridges, but we didn't quite get around to the roads. I think your response was that we have a bunch of road in bad condition, but what's the answer?
Well, as far as the paved roads, about a quarter of our county roads are paved roads. And I would probably estimate probably 50% of them are fair or poor. And with the funding we haven't been able to carry on a regular chip sealing process. We get to chip seal once every 3 or 4 years. So we're losing ground every year on these paved roads. Gravel roads, we're getting less and less rock sources around the county. It's getting more expensive to haul this rock farther distances, less manpower. I mean, we're second in road miles in the state of Oregon, but we only have 11 crew members, including a secretary and two mechanics. So it's just getting tougher and tougher to keep up with the infrastructure of these roads, and we're losing ground at a fast pace, and especially on our paved roads. It's just, I mean, we're losing them. I mean, luckily we've had some very good grant funding in the last 4 or 5 years to help on some of our more busier roads, and we really appreciate it. And but yeah, we're losing ground every day.
Thank you.
Representative McEwen.
Thank you, Chair Beyer. Could you elaborate a little bit on why you have fewer rock sources available? What's happening there?
Well, it's just getting harder and harder to apply for rock pit permits. It's getting more expensive, and there's more rules and regulations, and a lot of your private landowners don't want to mess with this. I mean, to put one in, you're into it over $5,000 or $6,000 before you ever get approved for a permit. So a lot of them don't want to bother with the expense.
So and some follow up, sir. So some of these are permits that have lapsed and they're not renewing them, or is it harder to find
new ground,
permits?
New ground. Pits? Yeah.
So you're finding the permitting process to be onerous and expensive.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Senator.
A follow-up on that, because we have heard today from Representative Bentz and Representative Smith how difficult it was to bring property into industrial zoning. We're hearing from you that permitting is making available rock sources more difficult. I'm going to pick on ODOT for a second. We saw a road today in Nissa, and correct me if I'm wrong, Representative Bentz, Lotus or Locus?
Locus.
Yeah. Locus. That had some very interesting swales in the middle of it, and I made an inquiry as to why that design feature was selected, and I'm told for traffic calming in a community of 2,800. So I would be curious, as a practitioner of road maintenance, how much are the regulatory architecture getting in the way of putting asphalt on the ground and moving people and goods to market?
Well, it's just, it's getting harder.
I know it's awkward with you sitting right next to ODOT, the arbiter of many of these bizarre regulations. But I you don't have to answer. I'm mostly asking on the record the sort of rhetorical question. Have we met the enemy and they're us by doing some of this goofy stuff? And I know that there are people that are very fond of downtown beautification, but I'll be damned if I understand the function that those bulb outs play where they seem to be so arbitrarily placed. And I'm wondering if maybe the committee at some point could have a collective conversation about how do we get more functional pavement on the ground and less ODOT, bells and whistles.
Well, yeah, all them bells and whistles cost money. They could be put towards, like you say, more beneficial paving.
We will make note.
That sounds like an
Senator.
Amen.
Senator Boquist.
I don't know who wants to answer. No, I think you're good, Barry. Just leave it.
You remember, you're only a job a month, so you want to be there another month. This particular slide right here shows the issues bridges. Can either of the three of you just throw out a rough order of magnitude or a cost estimate you've come up with? I mean, you've identified 900 bridges. If we were just to try and get them back to standard, is there a rough order of magnitude, 100 million, 200 million, 500 million?
Senator Boquist, I don't have that number for me, but I could probably get you something. So let me do some research and
just
definitely
trying to
get
think
you
of
that number.
A scope of magnitude, not an exact number.
For me, in my past experience as a bridge inspector, I know a lot about bridges, but in magnitude, we're talking millions of dollars. The need outweighs so much of what we would be looking at. And we're well aware of the OTIA program. That was just, really was just tip of the iceberg when it came, but it was a good start on looking at our infrastructure and the need that we have in that regards. But we're talking, depending on the size of the bridge, but the overall, just a conglomerate of the whole total cost, we're talking millions of dollars to do so.
You get back with us so we can get a rough order.
We'll do. So.
Yeah, Craig, we know that you can't even unroll the blueprints for under $1 million.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But if you give him the $1 million, he'll do three bridges, by the way.
There you go.
All righty.
One quick response, if I may, Chair. On Nissa, that part of that really, I think really what was driving some of that design, just for what I remember from that design clarification, was around drainage. It could have been part of a traffic calming, but for the city of Nissa and what we were looking at, and in order to look at the cost of the city streets and then put in a storm sewer system, this was an alternate method to do so. And we see this in some of our communities, is to put in these natural bioswells. So if you notice those islands, they were raw, all filled with rock, and the roads was actually inverted towards the center. And so in this case, truly, and because when they do get rain, they may get a lot of it at a short period. And so instead of going in with an expensive stormwater system, that I think that's what the engineers, what they designed with, was something to handle the drainage more so.
Okay,
enough. I got a bunch of people who want to talk.
Yep.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. And I've been reminded that I have not introduced the governor's transportation advisor, Ms. Carmen Flores, in the back here. So if you want to get the governor's ear, she's right back there.
It's her fault.
All righty, so ready to go to this list, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
So now Mike McLaughlin, I think.
He's not here.
Well, we'll get Mike up here, and then we'll actually Thomas and Sandra Downs, if you want to come up too.
Sure.
We were going to try and keep you separated. Make sure we have peace.
Thank you, committee, for being here today. I'm Mike McLaughlin, Mayor of Vail. I sit on the Greater Eastern Oregon Regional Solutions Team, and Vail, Oregon is the greenest little city in Oregon. We've got a $80 million geothermal power plant right outside of town and five solar projects going in and around our community. For a small community like ours, it's a great deal. I want to thank you for helping us secure $4 million for the Gentura Cutoff Road. That's the road that goes out to Eagle Pitcher, which is our diatomaceous earth mining. There are 50 associated jobs with that road there. They were looking to ramp up their either facility here in Oregon or their one in Nevada. So we're very happy to secure that money for that road and keep those jobs here. Remember, 50 jobs in small communities are like thousands of jobs in the metropolitan area, so it's a big deal. Small city allotments used to be $25,000 a year for small cities like us. That was kind of revamped, and now it's up to $50,000, but we have to wait 5 or 10 years to get that money. So if we could fix that and allocate more money for small cities. Remember, when you're back there putting your transportation plan together, remember our small cities. We're desperately in need of money to revamp our roads. Now, us in Mount Hurd County, we all work together. We collaborate very well. When we're doing roads, when somebody secures some money, being at the county or one of the three larger cities, we all collaborate together with the county and the three cities. We have an ad hoc road committee that goes out and takes care of whatever project that we're doing. So we're very good at dealing with our money, and we're very frugal with it. So the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was coming up with a comprehensive plan, a transportation comprehensive plan. We really need you guys to do your due diligence back there and come up with a plan so that we can move on. And I think that's the biggest thing that we need here from your committee, from you people at the legislature, is to go ahead and agree to come up with a comprehensive plan that works for both sides of the state. And I really appreciate you guys being here today. And I'll turn it on to the next gentleman.
Thank you. Just a second. Mayor, hold on.
I perhaps need some help with a definition. When you say a comprehensive plan, that is a specific thing. What are you talking about? I mean, I just don't understand.
I'm talking about a plan that works for both sides of the state, not only Portland, but Mount Hurd County and smaller communities like ours. So that's why I asked you to kind of keep us in mind when you're putting your transportation plan, because remember, most of the cities in Oregon are 5,000 or less. So we have the larger cities are more taken care of than us smaller cities. So please, when you're putting your comprehensive plan together, remember us small cities less than 5,000.
I got you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Byer. I want to go back to your comment about small city allotments. This has come up more than once tonight in the couple of hours that we've been here. And I've also heard comment about grant match money that is really difficult to come by. So educate me. Can you use small city allotment money for matching grants for federal funds?
Sometimes we can. It all depends on the project. So again, we have not too long ago, about 6 years ago, we had a transportation growth management come through town, $80,000 grant that helped us with now our Safe Routes to School, which is the Southwest Area on Transportation, one of the projects that they're funding this year. Another thing I wanted to say about the Southwest Area on Transportation is they're a trusted entity that is very frugal with our money, very trusted entity over here. So when you're funneling money through the Axis, and I know they're all over the state, it's a good thing. They're trusted members of your committee, and you can trust them to spend the money correctly.
So the small city allotments aren't always just direct investment. They can be leveraged.
They can be leveraged for larger projects, but most of the time, in the olden days, $25,000 would get us maybe a street paved each year. And so that's where we've fallen behind now, that we haven't got that small allocation for about 5 or 6 years, and we have not been able to afford too many projects.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you again. Okay, I don't see anybody else. Please.
Okay, so my name's Thomas Downs, and I'm from Fields, Oregon. So we own the town of Fields and that. And so it brings us, as Representative Bentz came down to our community and discussed some of our road needs, and our community gathered up. The group that was there, quite a bit smaller, all agreed that a fuel tax was probably the answer. But so I'm looking at some other alternatives too. So we all know the roads are terrible. So I'm looking at where money's being spent right now. As we drove, and so here's the one thing. Some folks flew in today, and it's for shame, you know. If you think I'm an S son of a beautiful mother, you're right. But I think you should have driven here, because you can't experience the roads that we drive every day. So Highway 20, if you drive, there's rumble strips, you know. So I'm gonna pick on ODOT. I don't understand. Is that a mandated thing? As far as I can see, there's a heck of a lot of money spent on that, where what we need is shoulder improvements. The amount of signage, it's just ridiculous there. The speed limits, I love the speed limits, the raise in that. There's a couple highways we need additional speed limits raised on Highway 140. But the signing, why don't we just let trucks go 65? So money's being spent on signs, so we have two signs. 65 for cars, 60 for trucks. Most trucks are governed at 62 miles an hour anyway. You know, most fleets run that. The guys that run hot trucks like their trucks and aren't gonna be dangers on the road. So there's some money savings. Then, so we need to tax studded tires and farm plates. So the folks in our neighborhood, I see a total abuse of farm plates. So maybe farm plates should be, so the program was that you put GPS on vehicles, right, to track how many miles they travel. So maybe we ought to make farm plates mandatory GPS. One of the biggest things I see, there's a semi truck in our neighborhood that runs dozers to forest fires, and he's running on farm plates. And I own a straight truck, and I don't get farm plates because of my business. So I'm paying a different share of money. So we just need to make sure things are fair that way. And here's a photo of Bend, Oregon. See that there? See those cars? How are we capturing? How are those people paying their fair share use our roads? So if those kind of dispenser, you know, things are going in, can we not put a meter on that would retrieve dollars for their use of the roads? So, you know, these are showing up everywhere. And I looked at the cars, some of them are out-of-state cars, so we're actually capturing no revenue from out-of-staters. And we have numerous tourists that pass through. What else? Rumble strips. And I see on P Hill, ODOT's putting in these little rock checks to slow the water through the borrow pits. The first ones they put out washed out the first big rainstorm. They came in and put the same size in, and so why don't they learn? So that's wasted money, you know. So put in just don't keep wasting money that way. And probably the killer is that I also see, and people aren't probably gonna like this, but when they trail cattle down the road, and I talk to the ODOT folks in our area, as they trail cattle down the road, the cows tend to knock the shoulders, all the gravel off the shoulder of the road, and over time you get this big disparity between pavement and shoulder rock. And the guys told me they spend a heck of a lot of time and money repairing that. So, you know, is that money well spent, or is there some, so how do we capture that? I mean, that's just cost of doing business. Self-service. So now we're off the. Oh, okay. Well, it's a quick one. She'll answer them. So we need to go self-service, all hours statewide. Here's what's happening to us as a business owner. SAFE has now taken.
She was going to talk
You're
about
taking her
SAFE.
Time.
Okay. Okay, so go.
Here, here's my time. It's a fresh start.
You've got to go home tonight.
My name's Sandy Downs. Okay.
And
I do have a question because I got hit with this last year, and I'm sure a lot of small businesses in Oregon are. You know, because we do have, in conjunction, just like any mini mart, with fuel being pumped and a convenience store. SAFE, workers' comp, has almost doubled for us per, you know, wages, because it's not full-time somebody out there. It's not self-serve. If it was self-serve, we'd be in a lower bracket. So we're paying almost $2,500 more dollars a year due to that fact. That we do not have self-serve.
Mr. Chair, I don't understand what you just said. Okay, is it the employees are part-time? Do you own a convenience store and a gas station? I don't understand your problem statement.
Our little town has a store, cafe, motel, and fuel. Okay.
And the best hamburgers around, by the way, Senator.
And our employees might pop out, pump fuel right back in, run the register, go clean a table, you know. So what they've told me is we're in the most expensive bracket per thousand or per hundred. And so it's costing me $4.63 per hundred of wages.
Simply because somebody that might be cooking burgers and bussing tables runs out and pumps fuel. It drives all your employees that might touch a fuel nozzle up into the highest range. Okay.
Right.
Thank you. Sorry you had to do this.
If we were totally like, you know, all the other states, we've already got it passed from 6 to 6. Okay.
Certain counties.
But if you had just self-serve in Oregon, it lowers our workers' comp drastically. And it's not just me. I mean, it's any little mini mart, any of them are getting hit with that. It's just a source of revenue for SAFE. Your time's over.
Well, we can't afford $15 an hour either with minimum wage going up, you know, for somebody to pump fuel. I don't care where you're at in the state, and I realize it creates jobs, but, you know, that's ridiculous.
Hey, you're done. But I do want to elaborate on what Cliff Vince did, you know, say, and everybody else has, and your comment about, you know, trying to get us a comprehensive plan. You know, we need to really realize how many people from the west side come over here and use these roads. It's a hell of a lot more coming that way than us using your roads over there. And so, you know, I think that's something to consider it with this, what you're talking about, because we do. We get a lot of tourists from your side of the mountain that comes here and use these roads, and we need to collect on it.
How would you do that?
How would I do that? I mean, yeah, we need to have a fuel tax. I think we do. But I also think, you know.
Toll road.
Huh?
A toll road.
But I mean, there is just something to think about. How, you know, can we figure out a way to do that? And I do have one other thing. Our chamber office brought this to my attention because we do have lodging tax. Something was going on, Eugene, so all of a sudden there was a big lodging tax being put in place. It was going to hit all of Oregon, even though the people on this side of the mountain weren't collecting any revenue for what was going on in Eugene, but it was going to affect the whole state of Oregon for lodging tax.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And let's see, Dirk DeBoer. I think I said that right. And Cameron? Cameron Skeen. And help me with that one. It looks like Corey. Corey hit back. Okay.
It's Dirk.
Dirk, yeah. As they say, Dirk. Well, Dirk DeBoer.
They're just being shy. They're all three here.
They're all here.
Hey, you're in the middle. You're first, Dirk.
Come on down. You drove over here. Welcome.
Well,
whoever wants to start.
Okay. Transportation have been
pretty... I need your name, please, for the recording.
Oh, my name is Dirk DeBoer. I'm from Ontario here.
Thank you.
And transportation has been very dear to me for the simple reason that more on the national level, you know, we in the United States pay a huge amount to get our product from the west to the east. And just as you read yesterday in the paper, the new Panama Canal opens up, and that makes it for us even tougher to be competitive in the onion business. We got to do different ways of moving our product from the west to the east and all the way to the United States. You know, we've seen a tremendous increase in freight cost, while you see a decrease in the container transportation. You know, we move product from Peru to New York. It costs us $2,300 for a container. From here, it is $6,000 to move it over. So, and I know it's not a new deal, we have to increase the gross weight on transportation. 80,000 across the United States is not productive. You know, we have 53-foot containers. They're not all the way filled up because we're over the limit on our weight. You know, and I see in the whole Western, like California, you know, they move a huge amount like we do at onions to the East Coast. And we're not competitive anymore in the freight rate. Now, I know it's not, but in the state of Oregon, you got 105,000, which works the benefit, but it's only in the, you know, now California, we don't have that. You know, so this is the thing we're really looking at, is how can we be competitive with our product on the eastern part of the United in the United States with those regulations. Part of it is, you know, our railroad system is not up to par. Our harbor in Portland is a disaster, and we're not doing anything, you know, in transportation. You know, at 20 years ago, at 15 years ago, we worked on it. You know, I asked, why don't we have a harbor, you know, in Astoria? You know, well, that wasn't in. But if we want to stay a nation of a state that is productive, we need an open mind, and we have to look, where do we want to be 20 years from now? And it is not with Portland being a harbor. You know, we might have the car industry bring the cars there, but the containers, as you all know, has disappeared. Containers are part of our product that we move, you know, in the world. And so that's why it's basically my biggest complaint is we're not looking far enough ahead, you know, and saying, where do we want to be 20 years from now? And I my biggest problem is that in Oregon, you know, we allowed Portland to become a second or third harbor. It's not even a harbor anymore, basically. You know, the Panama Canal is 60 foot deep. You know, the Columbia River is 40 foot deep. We don't count anymore. That's basically my tools. Go ahead.
Thank you very much.
My name is Cameron Skeen. I'm a member of Murakami Produce, and I'm also a local area farmer that specializes in the production of onions. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the onion industry, and it's some things have already been stated. Mr. Fairley earlier gave some pretty good economic data on how important the onion industry is to our area. I mean, it's pretty much the backbone, and as somebody said in our meeting this morning very eloquently, it's the straw that stirs the drink. So what I want to do is just kind of give a macro view of the onion industry here, how it's changed and where I see it going the next 30 years if things don't start changing, and tie that all back into transportation. So 30 years ago, we were the 800-pound gorilla in the onion industry. I wish I could say that we were still the 800-pound gorilla in the onion industry as of today, but we have a big brother now, or I guess I could say that. We have an equal brother to the north in Washington that has really become our major competitor. So we ship onions from August 1st until roughly May 1st. In that time frame, we compete with Washington, we compete with Mexico, we compete with Peru, and we compete with New York. And there are some other smaller competitors mixed in there, but those are our primary competitors. All of those folks have a freight advantage over us, as Dirk has stated, and it's pretty straightforward. Why are we not the 800-pound gorilla anymore? Nothing's really changed. We've still, from our standpoint, we still grow high-quality onions. We still do a tremendous job. We have a tremendous reputation. What has changed is our availability of and use of freight. The railroad is no longer reliable. Trucks are harder and harder to get. The location of the Columbia Basin to the metropolitan areas of Portland, Seattle, and Spokane provide them a better freight source to get to the East Coast, and then they also have RailX, which has been a major boost to their ag economy. If we don't do something here to keep up with the freight challenges that we have, our industry, I'm not going to say it's just going to disappear, but we will face headwinds that we've never faced before, and that will be very devastating to the economic viability of Malheur County. So I hope that we can keep that in mind. Thank you.
I just want to ask you, do you see the discussion we've had about the the rail facility, would that help?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My name's Corey Mogg. I farm and got a packing shed out of Vail. I'm also representing the Malheur onion growers today. We got to have different, as Cameron, I'm not going to say the same thing Cameron did, but he covered the freight disadvantages we have in the onion industry very well right now. And we got to look for future models of how we can get that crop transported out of this valley. And the transportation hub is a very good idea. We have to, as a producer here, we're faced with the higher minimum wage, with the cheaper freight. Maybe we can get more back to our producer to be able to compete with our neighbor in Idaho, whose freight advantage is close to $4 an hour. So, or going to be $4 an hour. Many of the my associates in the same type of business that are on the border are starting to move to Idaho, and unfortunately, I don't want to go to Idaho, but we're far enough away where we got our infrastructure. That's not really an alternative for us, so we got to find other ways to be competitive. And there's been a lot of talk about investing in roads and bridges. We have to get that crop to town to market. So we got to invest in the infrastructure, and that infrastructure will bring new businesses to Malheur County. Get new businesses, that'll take care of the wage increase itself. I mean, you get competitive businesses trying to hire people, the job wages will increase on their own. Dirk talked about weight limits. I believe Idaho has passed legislation to go to a higher weight limit than the 105. I think they're going up to 128,000, 129,000. And that's not only getting more produce, but it's also safer. There's less trucks on the road, and the braking per square inch is a lot higher on that than compared to an 80,000-pound truck, because there's more axles with more braking power. So thank you for coming over to Eastern Oregon, and I hope you consider our...
Thank you, Senator Bocas.
Thank you. I mean, I know this is not your business, but the three of you are businessmen, that's obvious. Like, if RailX, if a rail transfer facility was put in and just pick one of the three or four locations out here in Malheur County, it doesn't really matter to me. But if you did that, do you think, knowing not just your not your competitors, but the other businesses that are across the river, that it would actually draw freight in from the regional area and actually improve the economics around here by drawing in people instead of us shipping all of our crap to Idaho, right? That Idaho would turn around and actually send stuff to us to be put on trains?
It has to happen that way because we're not big enough just with the local. We have to pull from other areas into this area. You know, you take the facility in Washington. The facility in Washington pulls even people product from Albany, Oregon, from Seattle. They move it all over there. So we have the same thing. It is just who is the first one that's going to build it. But you know, it's all a matter of economics. If we have the facility, I'm sure there's a lot of Idaho growers that's going to bring the product over there, and there's probably people even from Twin Falls that will put product over here. It is just who is the first one that sticks out his neck. But, yeah, the circle has to be bigger.
Idaho is looking at trying to get the site in Twin Falls, too. I mean, they ship an enormous amount of potatoes. If we can get it here, a lot of those potatoes will come here to be shipped out. So that's what's so critical about trying to get it. So.
Makes sense.
Senator Johnson? I'd like to bring one point. How important is transportation? Last year I was in Belgium, and they're building two big French fry factories. Because of the strike in the West Coast, we became an unreliable French fry supplier in the Asian countries. That's how important it is. So we as the industry, the potato industry, can work for 50 years to get a market, and we get a strike on the total West Coast, and it destroys part of our market. That's how important transportation is.
Senator?
This may be a question for Paul Mather, who I see sitting in the back of the room. Who actually, the states or the feds, control weight limits on trucks? Can we, as Oregon, arbitrarily change our weight limits?
Yes, we can, because Idaho has done it. But there's a limitation on certain roads.
Yeah. Mr. Mather.
We have some abilities to make some changes, but there are some federal limitations. It's fairly complex, but we do have some abilities to make some adjustments.
And could ODOT provide the committee those road segments that could tolerate higher limits? Would we want to recommend that?
Well, it's all about bridges.
Because there are bed doors.
So there's great efficiencies, as you heard, from a trucking standpoint. But if we don't have bridges to carry them,
yeah,
it's not going to be as good.
Okay, thank you.
So it's about that relationship between the efficiency of your trucks and your ability of your bridges to carry the weight.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay. Thank you.
Alrighty, Andy, I think it's Renby. Huh? Andy Renby.
I agree.
And Kit Camo, and let's see, I can't make this one out.
Larry Wilson.
Okay.
Well, if you, we didn't have to move people, we didn't have to move people. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Kit Camo. I'm with the Snake River Economic Development Alliance.
Go ahead.
And I want to welcome each of you to far eastern Oregon. Having been born and raised in Oregon, I know where each of you live, and I'm so glad you were telling me where your areas are. I'd like to answer Senator...
Close enough.
question about the region. Boise State University did a transportation study on a regional transload facility and said it had to be 100 to 125 mile radius, and it will probably be larger than that. So in answer to that, I do economic development in three counties in two states, one of those being Mount Hare County, Oregon. My job is to help market the region with about 66,000 people in the area. We're able to market to larger companies. And we also look at value-added agricultural companies. We are looking at other industries as well. Ontario and this area is very interesting for some companies right now. The Boise area has had a huge increase in high-tech in the last few years, up to 65% increase in that, and that makes our area more valuable. So I ask that you do consider all of the requests you've heard today, considerations on maintaining, but also looking to the future to upgrade our infrastructure for transportation and roads, bridges, airports, rail, everything. Go for the whole thing. Anyway, it is very critical. We do have some very big projects coming into the area, and it's a very exciting time for us, but we need to plan ahead, and I appreciate your efforts in helping make some of that happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Larry Wilson, Malheur County Commissioner. A lot of this is sort of in part said by somebody else already, but Malheur County is very heavily dependent on agriculture. We're the largest cattle producing county in Oregon, which cattle, by the way, in the last year that the figures are in, surpassed the nursery industry as the top ag commodity in Oregon. And we produce about 27% of that total right here in the county. Our farmers, I believe this is correct, supply about 40% of the nation's onions. We're also a significant player in the potato, sugar beet, mint, dry edible beans, hay, grains, corn, and the seed markets. We need help getting all these products to market and to the processors. Future growth here in the ag industry and related businesses, it relies on access to getting the products and then shipping them out of here once they're processed via a good transportation system. And you've heard smattering of there are all kinds of transportation, but we need help. An example that brought this the Rail-X thing to light when I was talking to Greg Smith, a longtime company in Nissa, was there between the minimum wage issues and all different things, and there are some issues in they said that bringing trucks, availability of trucks, and getting into Oregon but with different weight limits and stuff than Idaho, they just barely get across a block into town, and they're getting a ticket at the weigh station. So it all added up that he was about ready to pull the plug, and they want to build a new processing facility, and I understand around $6-7 million investment on our side of the river for a change. Okay, and it would be so much easier to go across the river and build it where you can build about anywhere you want to at any time you want to, and it's just, there's a lot of red tape that's just eliminated going to Idaho. And I can see in the future, without help in the transportation areas, we're not gonna grow. And we once you lose a company to Idaho, you just don't get them back. And they're literally sitting over there 300-400 yards across the river, and all the tax benefits are theirs. So and getting this, and his comment was, well, one thing that might sway me in staying here is if we could get a Rail-X. And I never heard of it, so I asked him, and I called Greg, and within about an hour he was already down there talking to the guy. So we need help in that area, and before a Twin Falls or somewhere else picks it up, because to make it go here, we're going to need, I think they said, at least maybe a 60-mile radius, so we can pick up a lot of that product coming here to help our facility. So the other advantage, I think, in providing funds for this area and any help that you can give us is that our county and our cities and our economic development, we all work together. We don't fight over. We go to work spending your money wisely on what will help us, rather than, you know, not working together. We also work extremely well with the surrounding counties in our region, and we just appreciate you coming here and any assistance you can help us with to keep our county and our communities healthy, competitive, and some hope for growth here. Support our new businesses and and keeping them here and attracting new ones, well, we would appreciate it. And we thank you for coming.
Thank you, Senator.
Maybe this is a question best directed to Representative Bentz or Representative Smith. You mentioned multiple agricultural commodities. Is there enough space in the sites that you're looking at for the Rail X that you could handle multiple commodities? And is there a limit to how many commodities could be serviced in one terminal?
You want me to take that?
Well, I believe there, yes, there is, but Greg can expand on that.
Senator, if you've ever been to a transload facility, I mean, there's multiple products in there shipped in multiple ways. Some are in crates, some are in boxes, some are in
I know that, but what I'm asking is, do you have a footprint of land big enough that is attractive to RailX that you could not be commodity limited by the acreage available?
Yeah. On each of those locations that Representative Bentz showed you today, each one of those could accommodate the transload facility that the county's talking about. And just very quickly, that's why those sites were located. They're adjacent to the UP, mm-hmm. and they can accommodate the rail loop that is necessary.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's see here. Let me try again. Andy Renby? No. Okay. Jay Chamberlain? Oh, did I miss those? Oh, I did. come on up. I want to the bottom. Also, it looks like Shay Myers. Dwayne Poole, maybe? Ken Poole, and I can't read that one. Looks like Dwayne.
All part of Shea,
Oh, okay. That whole group. Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate this opportunity and really appreciate you coming to our area and seeing what we have here. My name is Jay Chamberlain. I manage the Owyhee Irrigation District. It's a federal facility. It provides water to the 125,000 acres both in Oregon and Idaho. If it wasn't for the facility, you wouldn't see the agricultural base that has been spoken of today. And what we're seeing for these farm operations to compete is these operations are getting bigger. The ma and pa farms are going away. And so these operations to even compete in the market and the competition that they're competing against, their equipment's getting bigger, their farm operations are getting bigger. And so my sympathies to them and the things that they're trying to compete with, and I appreciate the comments that's been made today. When you look at how they have to get this in this crop, in these drought years, we've just come out of 3 years of tremendous drought that has played a very difficult role in these gentlemen trying to make a living off of the land. They received one-third of their normal allotment of water the last couple of years. And so they're competing against all these things, and with that said, it's interesting to see how the ingenuity and how they've been able to get past that. And so anything that you can do to help them market their products, we're seeing growing conditions and weather conditions. There's a lot of fluff and stuff out there about global warming and global change and weather conditions, and the reality is it is. Whatever you want to blame it on, it truly is happening. Our watershed is 11,000 square miles. It goes into Nevada, Idaho, and Oregon. This is the largest drainage area. You can take the Boise, the Payette, and the Weezer drainages, put them in the Owyhee, and we've got room left over. And so with that said, again, this crop, these guys are experiencing different times of the seasons and different growing conditions. It isn't the same thing every year. Their crop rotations have changed. Because of disease and soil health and all these things, they can explain a lot more about it, but their whole regimen in trying to store this, harvest this, and get it to market is getting to be like a micro. I mean, they have to hit the market just right, and you see them trying to go through that. And so, again, I think transportation, and they've spoke to it today very well, is so key to them getting that product out of this area. I manage a federal facility, but being on a border town, Representative Bentz and I've had great discussions about the road. We have about a 25 to 30 mile road that leads up to, in 1932, was the world's tallest dam. It was a prototype for Hoover Dam. We have a jewel up there, and it's kind of the cat's out of the bag, and it gets recreated. Oregon Fish and Game have planted brown trout. It's a world-renowned fishery. We have tremendous pressure on that, but the fishery does very, very well. But there's only a handful of private landowners that live on that road, and the rest is all federal BLM controlled, and therefore the tax revenue to help fix that road is not there. And so here we have this jewel that gets used very heavily, and the road is literally starting to come apart. And so we've tried to look at different avenues to try and help us to fix that, but the pressure is going to continue to come because of the demographics just across the border, and there's no stopping it. It's just going to keep coming. So those are just some things that we struggle with, and we're trying to find ways to improve that. So thank you for your time, and we appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir.
Co-chairs and member of the committee, my name for the record is Shea Myers. I market and sell the onions and other produce that is grown on my family's farm. As you've heard a lot of people speak today, you probably are thinking of, to some degree, the burden that we might be to the more populous areas of the state. But I might remind everyone to think of the impact that we have and the consideration that in this country, and in, certainly including the state, we have the lowest cost for our food of any location in the entire world. That comes with the cost and the work that we must do as farmers in this area, but also comes to a cost to greater society, which means the infrastructure that we need for the roads, the bridges, and the other transportation is necessary for us to maintain our livings, but it's also necessary for us so that we can provide the food and the fiber that's needed for everyone else. And that provides opportunities for other people at other locations, more populous locations, to dedicate their lives to other things that contribute on a significant level to this world in which we live as well. So please consider that and that thought process when you consider to a certain degree the burden that we are, because we can see the challenge that we create, but we also see the benefit that we bring. What are our challenges as growers, as farmers in this area? One thing that has certainly been at the forefront of my mind and of some of the challenges we've seen is certainly the increase in minimum wage that's been brought up once. We're Idaho's just a few hundred yards from here. And 6 years' time from now, they very potentially could be half or less the cost per hour. We have the new newly implemented sick leave, which is almost 28 cents an hour of increased cost. We have the ACA. We also have FSMA, which is the Federal Safety Modernization Act, which is a significant cost to all of us as well. Not to mention the drought and the other issues that we're dealing with. There are certainly challenges here, but there are things that we can do and that we must do to make a difference, and that's what we're all here hoping for. Better roads are certainly important. Economic development in many different ways can have an impact for us. The RELX facility, and just to clear up something, we are currently users of RELX, but we have to subsidize the cost of using those facilities because our freight is actually shipped back. We ship our onions from here to Wallula, Washington, and then two or three days later, we watch the rail cars come piling by, right? That's, we're using it already, but we subsidize our competitors because we pay the extra freight cost to get our trucks to the same facility that they're using. That's why we need the hub here. That's why we need the opportunity here so that we are on an equal playing field and we can have those same strategic advantages. We've spoken to the cost of ocean freight. It's incredible. You can bring onions from, like a Chinese container freight. It's $1,200 for a refrigerated container. $1,200. Again, it's for the same comparable number to go to the East Coast. We're looking at somewhere in the $5,000 to $7,000 sometimes range. So there's some huge discrepancies. There's a couple places where it can help. The hub, absolutely. Another thing that I've seen implemented by both Washington and Idaho states is more on a trade show front. Lots of the trade shows that I attend, there's a subsidy or the state will rent out a portion of different trade shows that are associated with produce. And that helps me as a marketer show up at that show and not have to spend the $20,000 or $30,000 as an individual business to be there. And so my competitors in Washington are there. My competitors from Idaho are there. But they are not footing the bill themselves. So they're capturing market share that we otherwise might have an opportunity at.
We do that.
Okay.
I would commend you to the Department of Agriculture, their trade show marketing guys. We do subsidize folks to go to trade shows in Europe and Asia.
Right, but we need domestic. The export market is valuable. Mostly the Pacific Rim would be the only opportunity that we would have for export. But domestically speaking, it's a significant opportunity as well. Produce Marketers Association, the CPMA, which is the Canadian Produce Marketers Association, United Fresh. There's a number of domestic shows that would be very important.
Would you get us a list of those shows that you would attend? Were there some amount of subsidy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. Any questions, Ben? Thank you very much. Ken Poole is the last one I have on the list. Not here?
Is there anybody else?
All righty. Well, that's everybody I have signed up. I'd ask, is there anybody who isn't signed up that would like to talk to them? Come on up. Anybody else? We have three chairs.
I'm Roberta Vanderwall. I'm the city manager of NISA. And as I really appreciate everybody coming out and seeing our roads and seeing what we need for our community. I've had the pleasure of working around the state in several cities as a city manager. And I come to NISA, and we are a very depressed state. You know, we're 67% poverty level or higher. And we have people trying to make a living, and they can't make a living. And now, competing with Idaho or other entities that maybe have more money or something, it's hurting us more and more. And so I really appreciate both Representative Benz and Greg Smith for what they've done for our community. They're out there helping us. They're pulling for us. They're working so hard to get people and get money into our community. I've applied several times throughout the cities that I've worked in. They've all been under 5,000 population for the special city allotment grant. And the cost to build a block of street is phenomenal, or to improve that block of street. And as mentioned earlier today, our little street in NISA, that was something that Representative Benz came to us, and he talked to me in the morning, and he said, I need a project that is $1 million project by the end of the day that is a, you know, pretty much. Yeah. So, but
that's not how capital construction works. I just want to clear that up.
But we needed to have this project, kind of a project before, so that he could help us find some funding, like he did Lytle Boulevard and some other ones with the JTA. And we chose Locust because it's a collector street. We had the $1 million. We were going to connect the funds to downtown for walking and different things because we don't have continuity in our sidewalks. So we chose Locust because it was a collector street. However, by the time we designed the project, the bids were higher than what we could afford. So you have a half a street that's really ugly. It was formed by a committee. I mean, it looks pretty what's done, but it was formed by a committee on where to put the swales to keep the water off the road. We didn't want to lose our park there along Locust, so that's why the swales are there. However, we can't finish the project because we don't have the funding, and also we can't really finish the project because ODOT needs to help with the intersection as you come into NISA at the end of Locust. Right, there's a little curve when you come into town, and we need to have some additional funding for that. And right now we don't have it. So the other thing I'd like to say is all of the onion growers, packers, shippers that are in NISA, they're more there than most of the communities. And I've had the privilege to travel to Salem on the bus with them to support
our people instead of the high minimum wage. We can't afford it, and we lose business every day to Idaho. So I really appreciate you guys all coming, and just ask for your support in helping NISA and Malheur County, Baker County, you know, all of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? I'm going to put in another street request. Senator.
I have a question of the two representatives way down to the end there. Mr. Street Expert and the economic development. I mean, for the record, and we actually weren't here, we actually members of the committee, because we toured the community about RailX and the possibility of a transfer facility, so on and so forth. I'm just wondering if either one of those representatives want to put something on the record in the committee hearing in regards to that potential type of a project here in the community, because I don't think we've really heard any details per se in the committee setting versus informally. So I'm looking down at Representative Benz, Representative Smith.
As your chair, would you like that? I mean, it's just your call.
Whatever you'd like.
Sure, sure.
State your name.
For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct pleasure of serving the citizens of District 57. But as you folks know, the Constitution asks us to be citizen legislators. And so what I do for a living is economic development. And I'm pleased to support counties in Eastern Oregon in that effort. So the Malheur County Commissioners, in partnership with agricultural folks here in Malheur County and Baker County, Harney County, Grant County, have been diligently working on trying to put together what we call a transload facility. This is a facility where commodities, primarily agricultural commodities, but also other natural resource-based commodities, could come to one collective location and then be transloaded from truck to rail, or even potentially truck to truck, if that made sense, and then be shipped to parts throughout the United States or even to parts throughout the world. What we anticipate is that the project would have an estimated cost of about $22 million. We know that the transportation package cannot fund that entire bill, but it could be a piece of that project, and we would ask for your support on that. It's going to require strong collaboration between the legislature and the executive branch, private industry, and Union Pacific. And so part of what we're going to have to do as we collectively work on that project is have conversations with each one of those partners to figure out how do we put these pieces together. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I think what you've heard today, though, is there is a significantly strong interest not only from the ag community, but from Main Street, from our local government officials, who all collectively have locked arms and are ready to put their shoulder to the wheel and make this project occur.
Thank you, Representative. Senator.
As part of the mosaic that you're putting together, I think Commissioner Britton made mention of it when we met with the Act, and that was the project that he spoke of that took 20% of the total funding for Connect Oregon 6 was a UP project. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether or not that piece of information was known to you or would be useful in your discussions.
No, I appreciate that. And I would share with you on July 7th, Union Pacific has requested our presence to have a conversation about this project. And we know Union Pacific has many different priorities, but we also believe that they will give us a fair shake at trying to put this project together.
One follow-up. Mm-hmm. Representative, would you mind putting on the record the sense of urgency associated with this project? Because I think we heard testimony from others that Idaho may be courting a transload, and at a certain point you'll run out of geography to draw in the shipping radius. Give us a sense of the scope of urgency here.
Well, I definitely appreciate that. First of all, I want to share with you that the state senator just across the line is supportive of this project and has been a great advocate of this project. The sense of urgency is these four counties have a bird in the hand. RailX is a nationally prominent transportation company. They're returning our phone calls. They're communicating with us. They're sharing what their needs are. And as anyone knows in economic development, when the CEOs are calling you back you better respond quickly because they're going to go where the market takes them. And right now, they're returning our phone calls, and our county commissioners have stated this is a high priority for them.
Mr. Chair, the reason I actually asked him, and he doesn't know this, but you heard testimony earlier. There are products in my district that are going to the existing transload facility, but there's a shortfall because they need more capacity. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, if a facility were built here servicing these four counties and bringing stuff in, it would actually create more capacity capability as far away as my district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would share with you, I'm speaking at about a 15,000-foot level. I've had some pretty high-level conversations with RailX and what the needs are. I've also had high-level conversations with many of our producers or packers in this region. And as you can appreciate, they want those conversations held confidential. But, Senator, your comment is exactly correct.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator.
Yeah, just a quick question, and I'm sure you probably have it somewhere. But I heard that in looking at market share, and we really haven't talked a lot except for one of our testifiers talking about Washington, Mexico, Peru, and New York and others, also in the onion business. If we don't do this, or if we don't really deal with our infrastructure, has anyone done a projection of what market share we will begin to lose?
No, Senator Winters, Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair, Senator Winters, that's an excellent question. What I would share with you is that the Panama Canal just reopened up, and that is going to create a significant competitive disadvantage for our folks here in Oregon. There's no doubt about that we do need to do that analysis, but I can share with you our producers and packers in this community are competing at a global level, and the competition just got a little stiffer. And the reality is and I guess my comments are piling on, but this is a region with many challenges, and the project that has been brought forward to you collectively really provides an opportunity to support the industry that is the backbone of this area, and that's the agricultural industry.
Thank you. Anything else?
Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Just one concluding comment. I feel compelled as the former aviation administrator for the state of Oregon to defend aviation today. For those of us that did fly in, we had the opportunity to see the scale and grandeur of this part of the state. We had a sense of the distance between communities. We saw the meaningful role of water in agricultural production. And so I just want to share that even though we didn't drive on roads, we had the benefit of the opportunity of seeing far eastern Oregon from the air.
Thank you. Senator, I appreciate your comments. I, too, was going to comment. I began my journey in my car at 6 o'clock this morning, first driving from Coos Bay to Portland to fly over, which saved me a significant amount of time. My husband and I have spent many, many, many summers and falls in your part of the world, and I truly do believe, because I've been there a number of times, you have the best hamburgers east of the mountains, if not in the state, at the Fields Cafe. And if you're responsible for that, I thank you. And we've been all over the Trout Creeks and the Strawberries, and I spent summers in the Steens, and we've been up on the Oahe and the Imnaha. And there are those of us who live on the west side of the mountains but truly do appreciate and love the beauty and everything you have to offer over here and do appreciate the lifestyle that you have. So I just wanted to make sure to get that on the record. We're not just flying in and flying out, that that we truly do, I think, have some sense of hopefully a little bit of a sense of what you do, and we appreciate it very, very much. So.
Thank you. I would note that for many of us, we actually did this last fall as well. Yeah. Spent some time with the ranchers up in the northwest corner, northeast corner.
Yes, yes,
and
we did.
And as well as over in Hermiston, where we will be tomorrow. Is anybody else? Down there, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just very quickly, I'd be remiss if I didn't recognize Senator Abby Lee, who's with us from the state of Idaho. She's a great friend of Malheur County.
Welcome.
And she's a great lady.
Mr. Chair, I just want to remind you that, I mean, I've
drive these roads because I farm in Wallowa County and Elko County, so I transit your place all the time here. So.
Is there anybody else who wishes to make a comment?
Well, it's kind of nice to be back over in Eastern Oregon. It's been a long time since I was here when you had the grasshopper infestation. And
all righty.
Drove out the grasshopper.
Last chance for anybody who wants to comment. If not, thank you all for... Oops.
Indecision.
Sometimes you got to wait till the last minute.
Sorry about being late. I'm Norm Kroom, a resident of Ontario lifelong and a city councilor for the city of Ontario. The one thing that I would like to stress for everybody here and all the comments here today is think of one thing that we need from you, and that is to be competitive. Our farmers, our ranchers, our cities and counties can be competitive if we're on an equal playing field. We feel that we haven't been because of rules and regulations. And the more that you can do to put us on a level playing field, the better off we can compete on our own.
Thank you.
And the clean gas tax, I personally, the carbon fuel tax, whatever you want to call it, I believe is going to be detrimental to us, especially sitting here on the border where all these people in this room can drive over to Idaho and buy fuel cheaper than buying it from our dealers here in town.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all for bearing with us and for coming and sharing your thoughts.
Good seeing you.
I'm in home. I'll see you guys tomorrow.